Hello and welcome to the Anti Football Podcast. My name is Chris. As always, I am joined by Harry. And if we were going to be recording this yesterday, like I thought I was going to be able to do, it wouldn't have been as eventful as a recording. Something really big's happened today involving Harry's club, Chelsea. But, you know, we'll get into that when we get into that. But it involves, you know, big Frank Lampard. But, you know, we'll go through the Premier League games. And when we get to Chelsea, we'll get to Chelsea. But we'll start off with a big upset, an East Midlands derby here. West Brom managing to beat Wolves 3-2, you know, coming back from being behind away to eventually win. And this puts West Brom, well, I'm not going to say they're going to start and pick up some momentum, but if they'd have lost this, then it really would have looked grim. It was a must-win game, this, for West Brom. And when the pressure was on, they managed to pull out a result against a Wolves side that really aren't looking great.
No, you can definitely see their directionless without Raul Jimenez. They're trying to rectify that now, having signed Willian Jose. Bit of a similar build to Jimenez, good goal scorer, so hopefully we'll give him some direction. And I really do not see the hype behind Fabio Silva. I mean, you take that Chordy game, I don't know, he doesn't look like 40 million.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did score in this game, actually, against West Brom. But, you know, he is only, what, is he 18?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, he's still got a good, you know, 15 years ahead of him in his career. Obviously, I don't think Wolves were expecting to have to rely on him like they are doing this season so soon. And I think the 40 million is something that we're not going to see an immediate payout for, but it's something that gradually over time he'll prove his worth to his 40 million. I still think that it was a good buy for Wolves. I mean, personally, I wouldn't have paid £40 million, but, you know, I do think eventually he could prove his worth. He's only 18 years old and you're seeing people, you know, writing him off already.
Well, the price tag attached to him does, it gives you an impression of what kind of player you're expected to see. The, you know, what he's shown so far is nothing close to what the fee was paid. That makes sense. You've already got a prejudice against him because you know in your head he's 40 million. What you're seeing isn't 40 million.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm not, you know, trying to suggest that he's worth 40 million right now. All I'm trying to suggest is that, you know, he's only 18. You know, you can't write him off so soon. Like the Premier League, he's come from Liga NOS, and the step up from the Liga NOS, you know, with all due respect, to the Premier League is a big step up. And he's been thrust into Wolves' side as the main man. And, you know, it's gonna be hard for him. There's gonna be a period of transition, you know. You see him, players like Timo Werner struggle for adapting to the Bundesliga, to the Premier League, and he's far more experienced than Fabio Silva is. So it's gonna take time for him to, you know, adapt to the league, adapt to the style, and develop into a quality number nine.
Yeah. I think Wolves were probably better off waiting for him to develop in Portugal before buying him, not, you know, pull the trigger too early.
Yeah, but the problem is with that is that, you know, if they waited until next summer to buy him, you know, if he has a good season in Portugal, then you've got bigger clubs who can offer more money and more wages. So, you know, they could have done with acting whilst they did. I do think, you know, you're right that a loan move potentially could benefit him a lot.
Yeah, they signed him, then loaned him back, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I don't think he's ready for the Premier League yet, but just to write him off as not ready, I don't think that's particularly fair on him, so I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as for West Brom, though, you know, you've got Snodgrass coming straight into the team. You know, it's I don't like to pigeonhole managers, but it is a typical Big Sam signing, you know, someone who's a grafter. You know, not a particularly long-term solution, but, you know, someone who will work hard for the team. And we saw that in this game against Wolves. And it does look like West Brom, not that they're turning a corner, but it's looking like they're showing a lot more fight than they were, you know, in previous games. You know, you look before this game, you look at 4-0 against Arsenal, 5-0 against Leeds, 3-0 against Aston Villa. You know, they were getting comfortably beaten, and, you know, they really needed this win against Wolves to help lift them back up. And after the Man City game that they've got next, after that, they have Fulham at home and Sheffield United away. So those are two really big games for West Brom to be able to try and, you know, elevate them out of the relegation zone, because they still are 6 points adrift. So it's not like they're propelling themselves out straight away. They're still going to have to work hard and hope other teams drop points. But they're definitely looking a lot healthier than they would be if they were on 8 points. I think if they were on 8 points, then we could almost write them off at this point.
What about the two penalties from Matheus Pereira? Do you think they were penalties?
I do think both of them were penalties. I just think it were pretty clumsy defending from Wolves there. I mean, Bolly, for the first, it was just careless and stupid defending. You know, there was no need to stick that leg out. And for the second one, you know, Pereira, with a good little bit of skill to get in tight. But it was just careless from Cody as well. And Cody, you know, he's worked his way into this England team. But ever since Wolves have moved to a four at the back, he's really looked, well, I don't want to say exposed. I think that's probably the wrong word. But he's definitely looked a shell of his former self as when they were playing with a back three, Wolves.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they haven't been able to play, like, I don't know. I think the five at the back allowed them a lot more freedom going forward. I mean, you're seeing a lack of goals due to not having a target man.
Mm.
And then you're seeing a lack of width.
Mm.
I mean, they've scored less than Brighton, who have had striker issues themselves.
Mm.
You know, and Brighton, I think they've got possibly... Well, I think they're very unlucky when they play Brighton.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, it's not just goal scoring as well. I know, obviously, the absence of Raul Jimenez will have hindered them, but they've conceded 29 goals in 19 games, you know. And you look down at the relegation zone, you know, Sheffield United have conceded 32, so that's only three more, and they've got 5 points all season. They've conceded more than Fulham, who are in the bottom three, conceded more than Burnley, and conceded the same amount as Brighton. You know, that on both ends, it feels like Wolves are really underperforming. You know, I must admit, I thought at the start of the season that Wolves, without European football this season, because remember last season, they finished seventh with European football. So I genuinely thought this season that they would be in a position to kick on, almost get sort of pushed for top five almost. But they've really underperformed this season. I don't know, you know, about how loyal Wolves are. I don't know whether Nuno is in under any genuine pressure, but purely from the outside looking in, it does seem like he's starting to fall under a little bit of pressure. You know, I'm not saying that he'll be sacked or whatever, because again, I don't know what the owners are like. I don't know, you know, how loyal they are to Nuno. But, you know, when you think about Wolves finishing seventh in the last two seasons in a row after being promoted, and this season they're down in 14th, and it doesn't look like they'll be pushing top half even this season, I wouldn't be surprised if questions were starting to be asked, especially with lots of money being spent in the past few seasons.
Well, I guess there's still a bit of backing because they've let him loan in William Jose, and he's got an option at the end of the season to sign for $20 million. So I guess there's a bit of hope there. I mean, they're only 7 points off of 8th. You know, being that, you know, they sort out the goal difference. I don't think there's much to worry about yet, but it depends on how they do when. Well, is there a date set for when Jimenez is back or not?
I've no idea. I mean, I've heard roughly around about March time. So it will be a big coup to get him back. Obviously, you know, it was the same injury that, you know, ended Ryan Mason's career. Mm-hmm. So it could have been a lot worse. And yeah, that will definitely be a big boost to have him back. But I think even before the injury, they weren't, you know, they looked a lot less sharp than they did last season.
Yeah, definitely. Is that because of there's no Jota? There's no Doherty driving forward. Now there's no Jimenez. I mean, that's three key players wiped out.
It could be. And I mean, you know, you look, especially in the case of Doherty, they haven't really replaced those players. You know, because at the end of the day, you look at the team from last season and it does look a stronger team. I think in terms of transfer business, they've ended this season, or they're looking like they're going to end this season weaker than they started it, which is never a good thing. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, you know, Wolves are going to get relegated or anything like that. I do think there's too much quality in that team for them to get relegated. But, you know, to say the deals that they did, yes, they did look weaker, but halfway through the season, they should not be sat in 14th.
Agreed. There are games that haven't gone their way, but, you know, that's part and parcel of the Premier League. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it'd be fair to sack Nuno after the past achievements. You know, let's say they finish 10th. I don't think that's too far off the mark from last season. You know, in such an injury-struck season where they've lost key players and failed to replace them.
I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, it could easily be turned around once you get, you know, the likes of Jimenez back. I know... What's that?
Depends on William Jose as well.
Yeah, it depends if he can get firing. I know Wolves do have a really tough run of games coming up. Got Chelsea away in 2 days' time, and then after that they've got Palace away, Arsenal at home, Leicester at home, Southampton away, Leeds at home. So it is a very difficult running for Wolves. So, you know, at the end of the day, are they starting to look over their shoulder a bit? I think they're probably more likely to be looking down than looking up at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think even last season's team would have struggled with that run of games, to be fair. I mean, they probably wouldn't do too much better because of the quality of the teams around them, and Chelsea are probably going to have a new manager bounce when they come to play them. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely been one of the biggest surprises for me. The fact that Wolves are, you know, struggling as much as they did. You know, I wouldn't have thought that Wolves would be below the likes of Crystal Palace and Leeds halfway through the season, at the start of the season. But, you know, like you said, once William Jose gets introduced, once Jimenez comes back, once Johnny comes back, because he's another key player, we could see him, you know, return back to form. Who knows? I want to start to talk about West Ham and Burnley. I'll go over it quickly, because most of the points that I would bring up are irrelevant now because of a later result. But this game was a really poor watch. You know, West Ham nicked an early goal with Antonio, and were more than happy to let us have possession for the rest of the game. You know, it was one of the few times where we actually ended the game with more possession than the opposition. We created relatively similar amounts of chances, but we just couldn't convert. You know, teams are happy to let us have the ball because we're not going to do anything with it.
Yeah.
I think, especially in the first half, when we had no Dwight McNeil, there was really no attacking impetus at all. You know, I think that once Vidra and J-Rod came on, it got a bit better, but it still wasn't great. But, you know, West Ham are a good team. They're in really good form at the moment. They're currently sat in seventh place, only, you know, 2 points behind Liverpool, sat in fourth. So it's not like West Ham are a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. It was a poor watch as a Burnley fan, and I'm sure as a neutral as well. I don't feel any sense of negativity around Burnley because of the later result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, a lack of goals is pretty much the story of your season.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the only upside is the outstanding defence and goalkeeper.
Hmm.
That's always your bread and butter, and you know, as long as you keep the goals out, you know, the game's in your hands.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's summer, especially under Dyche, you know, not so much under, you know, Brian Laws and Eddie Howe, but that's summer that Dyche had, you know, introduced at the club, this whole work ethic, you know, grafting sort of mentality. And defensively, you know, we're always going to be fine. You know, we've conceded 22 goals in 18 games this season, which is more than better than any of the teams around us. And that's with our captain and one of his best centre-halves, you know, in the past 30 years in Ben Mee being injured for half of that. So defensively, we're absolutely fine. If Ben Mee was fit for the whole season, I'm confident that we'd have conceded less goals than we've played in.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have conceded less goals than games that we've played in. I'm confident of that. But yeah, like you said, going forward, it's just we wooden barns up front. With Vidra and Jay up front, we create a lot more. We play a lot more expansively. I think it helps, you know, because Jay ends up dropping off and Vidra can run in behind. They've got a really good dynamic, whereas Wood and Barnes are very static forwards, Wood especially. Barnes does tend to press more and, you know, wins free kicks. And that has a place in a club. But it shouldn't be as a starter. Barnes is someone who'd be perfect for a plan B, you know, 20 minutes to go. You need someone who'll win your dangerous free kick, you know. You need someone who'll be able to graft out in the result. That's a role for Barnes. But I think starting-wise, we should start with Jay and Vidra up top. And I think the fact that we've had Wood and Barnes all season with the exception of one or two games, I think that showed in the lack of goals that we've scored this season.
There's not really much else to add on that game. I think we've summed it up.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you...
game definitely has a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, I'll let you talk about this game. Fulham and Chelsea, as a Burnley fan, I was absolutely shitting it because I thought Chelsea were going to bottle it again. I thought Fulham are coming into this game in great form. You know, they were playing well. Chelsea weren't. And, yeah, it was a lot harder than it needed to be for Chelsea.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, if there's ever a game to show someone where players want to get a manager sacked, that's the one. They're so lethargic. I mean, a lot of the time they're just playing around the back. It was really poor. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, of course it had to be Lampard's boy, Mount, that got the goal. Because, you know, that he sort of gave him his Chelsea career, really. Thanks to his, you know, loan at Derby. And continually plays him all the time. Even though he's not good enough, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's much really to point out. I mean, you could definitely see that Fulham were missed in Loftus-Cheek. You know, watching him, who was it they paid after us?
It was Man United, that was it.
Yeah, you know, they looked a lot more up for it, a lot more direct. That was because of, you know, RLC, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, it was Chelsea's game to lose the way we were playing, because I don't think we sort of gave away any chances that, you know, put us in jeopardy at all. It was just a case of, can we break them down? And we weren't looking like it due to how lethargic we were. And Mount dug us out. And I don't know, we kind of saw the same thing in a later game. I'm glad Frank's gone now.
I think you can tell, you know, from the stories that come out, that, you know, people were reporting that, you know, the players, they weren't playing for Lampard. There was a complete, you know, lot. But yeah, you could tell from the stories that were coming out in the media today that, you know, the dressing room had lost faith in Lampard, that the players weren't playing for Lampard, that they were sick of Lampard. And it's definitely something that you could tell in this game, obviously in the Leicester game later on. There was just a complete, like you said, I think you described it perfectly when you described it as lethargic. It was just, you know, there was no intensity, there was no high pressing, you know. There was just, you know, there was nothing. I mean, you know, players like Pulisic and Ziyech, who are really good players, out wide, they did nothing. And I think that was just down to a lack of, you know, the faith in Lampard, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. And that itself has got criticism because they say you play for the badge, not the manager, don't they? So,
yeah, I mean, you know, I'll never back a player in that sort of situation. Because at the end of the day, you're getting paid, you know, hundreds of thousands a week by the club to play football well. That's your job. You know. Like, you're not intentionally play bad. That's disgusting, in my opinion. You know, whether you like the manager or not.
Yeah, but I sort of think of it as, I don't know, let's take a shot, for example. The Storm manager's an absolute prick. No one's going to want to put their effort in it, their heart in it.
Well, no one's, obviously.
I know there's a money factor.
Obviously, you're not going to put 110% in it, but at the same time, you don't intentionally go out of your way to look bad to get him sacked, are you? Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know if that's what's happened or not. I don't know whether it was, you know, they were trying to get him sacked or whether it was just they weren't putting in as much effort because they didn't like him. I'm not sure of the situation. If it was the former, it's disgusting. And if it's the latter, then, you know, like, it's less disgusting, really.
It does It has been a long time coming for me. I think prior to that Fulham game, I wanted him out. The results just were not reflective of the Chelsea I know and love, you know, and the amount of money that's gone into it. It's, you know, we were losing games we should have won, you know, 3-3 with Saints, 3-3 with West Brom, losing the Wolves, you know, losing to an Arsenal team that was on the, you know, down the bottom. Like, and then there was no silverware to show for it last season. I know he didn't have any financial backing, but he definitely had a capable squad to come out with something.
Mm.
Yeah, just I think it's now caused a division in Chelsea fans where some people think, oh, he didn't have enough time. I'm thinking he had too much time, because if there was any other manager in Chelsea who had run the results that he did, they'd be gone way earlier than him.
Yeah. Yeah, if he wasn't a club legend, he'd have been sacked. Yeah. I think that, you know, you just look at where Chelsea were when Lampard took over. You know, they were third in the league, you know, easily the best of the rest. You know, you had Man City and Liverpool far ahead of everyone, and Chelsea were sat in third. They got to a League Cup final, and they won the Europa League. Like, you know, whether you like it or not, a cup final, best of the rest, and a European trophy. Like, that's what you got under Sarri. And then you got rid of Sarri, you brought Lampard in, and yeah, he had a transfer ban, but what's Lampard done? He got you fourth place last season, he got to an FA Cup final, and this season he's sat in ninth.
We're out of the League Cup.
Out of the League Cup, yeah. Yeah,
we're probably going to, well, I think we would have gone out under Lampard with, you know, Atleti, you know, coming up.
Mm.
I think the tables have turned now that we're going to get a new manager.
Mm. Yeah,
that's a different thing entirely.
Yeah, I just think, you know, you sacked Sarri. You've ended up spending over £200 million in the transfer market this season, and you've ended up getting in a far worse position than what you were under Sarri.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we've regressed somehow.
Mm. Yeah, and I don't think, you know, that... I think it's just down to, you know, inexperience. I just, you know... I mean, it's clear to see to anyone that Lampard wasn't ready for that level. He wasn't ready to, you know, take on that kind of spending. Because, you know, in the first season, he did well with the players that he had. You know, he got you to fourth place, which, yeah, you know, for Chelsea, you know, you might be wanting more. But with a transfer ban, with the limited resources that he had, he did well with that. I just don't think he was prepared to spend the sort of money that Chelsea were prepared to spend. You know, you're looking at the players that he brought in, and they clearly weren't his signings, by the way. But you're looking at, you know, Werner, who he's brought in and he's played out of position. You're looking at Havertz, who he's brought in and he's played out of position. You know, that's £120 million worth of players that he's played out of position.
He was playing Kante out of position.
Yeah. Last season and quite a bit of this season as well. Yeah, it's just, I don't think he's a bad coach. I just think he wasn't ready for the level that Chelsea are wanting to be at, which is, you know, pushing for a title race. But when you consider, you know, Liverpool are stuttering, Man U had one of the slowest starts to the season, you know, in their history. Man City haven't looked at the top of the game. Spurs started off well but fell off. Arsenal, a bottom half. You know, when you consider all those factors, you should be thinking that Chelsea, you know, they should be up there, and they're not.
And teams like Villa, Everton, Leicester, they've capitalised.
Mm.
Yeah, if we were more on the ball, we could definitely definitely have been title contenders. We're not now.
Oh, no. No. I mean, it's going to be a challenge for... It's looking like Tuchel who's going to take over. And it's going to be a challenge for him to get top four, never mind, you know, winning the league.
Well, I'd hope that the club will say, we took a while bringing you in. I think top four isn't that realistic. But if you can, you know, deliver a League Cup, FA Cup at the end of the season, we'll keep you on.
Mm.
Just something, you know, as a mark of success.
Mm.
Something that's not too out of their realm. I mean, Champions League, I don't think we're going to get past Atleti.
Mm.
I don't know. Last season, when we brought in Lampard, I felt like he was the only candidate because who was going to take on Chelsea when they weren't allowed to spend and, you know, they can't put their mark on the team and possibly be sacked halfway through the season because of that.
Yeah. I still don't understand why you ended up sacking Sarri. Like, he got you a Europa League and third and to a cup final. Like, what, did both want him to win the league? I don't understand. Like,
Yeah. I mean, there was a time during his run where I did want him sacked, but then he turned it around. And then I was like, nah, he needs to stay, you know, particularly with the achievements you mentioned. But then they went and sacked him anyway. It was very bizarre.
Mm.
You know, he did have a slump, yes, but he recovered from it. Lampard,
well, all managers have slumps.
Yeah.
You know, look at what Liverpool are going through right now with Jurgen Klopp. You know.
6 games without a win now.
Yeah. And scored 1 goal in 5 games. Like.
Mm.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't... And I don't think I will ever understand Chelsea's policies when it comes to managers. They are just Watford, but with more money.
Yeah, I guess. Hopefully under 2K, we say you're guaranteed your job until the summer. You know, any slip-ups from there, consistent slip-ups, you're gone. You know, I think you should have definite job security until the summer, because I doubt we're going to spend any money in the summer this January due to the losses we've announced.
Mm.
And we're probably going to have to fork out a bit of money to get Tuchel in and compensation for Lampard.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, hopefully they back him with, you know, a big budget where, you know, I don't know. Hopefully they put some stipulations in where he's given enough time, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I don't think it would be fair to judge him off anything this season when, you know, it's not his squad. He's coming in mid-season and he's inheriting Frank Lampard's squad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that there'll be a couple of players that he does like. I mean, you know, Pulisic broke through at Dortmund when Tuchel was manager, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and I mean, obviously, you know, the people have talked about the German connection with Werner and Havertz that he has. And obviously, you know, Thiago Silva as well when he was PSG manager. So there will be players that he likes in that team, but obviously I don't think it's fair to be able to judge a manager before they can even bring in any of their own players.
No, that's true. Also, him being multilingual helps.
Mm.
Odd. Probably couldn't... You know, I mean, he speaks English. He doesn't know anything. So, with Tuchel known German, English and French, hopefully the messages become, you know, they're more understood.
Mm, yeah, and I think that'll definitely help as well with Werner and Havertz. You know, the fact that you know, it's their first season in England, and they'll be able to have someone, you know, speak to them in German when, you know, their English probably isn't the best.
Mm-hmm.
That'll definitely help. And, you know, if Tuchel ends up playing them in the right positions, then you might actually get something out of them.
Yeah, and he'll be able to talk to Kante in French, tell him to stay deep, stop driving forward. And then he's got brilliant English, so he can speak to Rhys James. You know, and to have an experience at top clubs, he'll be able to individually coach players, which Lampard seemingly didn't do.
Yeah.
With Rhys James, you'd work on his defending. You know, he's got brilliant crossing and going forward, but absolutely useless as a defender.
Mm.
I wonder if, you know, he'll be allowed to bring a coaching staff in. And...
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he will, definitely.
So that's Joey Dumas out of a job.
Yeah. Well, wasn't he going to... I thought that he was going to be taking over as caretaker,
okay.
Maybe not. You know, just for the next couple of days, obviously. I'm sure he'll keep, you know, people like Petr Cech around, for example. People who've been there for, you know, years and years and years. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, as any manager wants, you know, he'll want to bring in his own coaching staff. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, is there all else that you want to add on to that, or?
No, I'm just excited.
A Champions League finalist last season was too cool. So yeah, you've got every right to be excited.
Yep.
Right. Well, we'll move on then. I mean, you know, I don't know. We'll go on. We'll go to Sheffield United and Tottenham on the Sunday. Sheffield United, you know, actually, you know, again, they put up a decent fight. I think this season, you know, something about Sheffield United is they haven't been humbled really at all. You know, that they do constantly, you know, scrap and claw for, you know, any result that they can get, which, you know, they have to. But they didn't make it easy for Spurs. I mean, it ended up 3-1, but at one point, you know, it looked like Sheffield United were going to get back into the game. But I think it's almost certainly safe to say that Sheffield United are gone. 12 points adrift from, you know, Brighton, who are currently sat in 17th. And I can't see there being that much of a goal swing. I don't know about you, Harry.
So I feel sorry for Chris Wilder. They're very defensively sound, you know, for where they are. It's just the strikers. I mean, if they had better strikers, I'm sure they would be mid-table. It's, you know, McGoldrick, McBurney, Brewster, Burke, you know, whoever else they put up top, they're just not getting enough goals from. I mean, 10 goals this season. That's the lowest, joint lowest with Burnley in the English football pyramid.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, the difference between Sheffield United and Burnley is Burnley are more adept at defending. They're able to keep clean sheets. Whereas Sheffield United are better at the damage control side of things.
Yeah, I think that's somewhat that's shown. Because, I mean, attacking-wise, there's not been much difference. I mean, I'd even argue that Sheffield United have looked better than us going forward. I just think it's our ability to grind out results, you know, that we've done season after season. It's somewhat that Sheffield United... You know, they weren't having to do last season, and this season, you know, without the likes of Jack O'Connell and Dean Henderson, they're not able to do.
Mm-hmm. I think Ramsdale has done a brilliant job. He's made some of the most saves in Europe. I don't know what Henderson's stats were last season, whether he even ranked amongst most saves or not. Probably having a better defence ahead of him, maybe there was less shots at him, I don't know. So yeah. I think their downfall does lie up top. If they were able to get, you know, 10 more goals even, I think they'd pick up more draws, or even more wins.
Yeah.
Because they're only losing games for a goal or two.
Yeah, and that was something that, you know, we were saying even last season, is that, you know, they needed improvement up front. You know, it is a shame, because I don't like seeing Northern teams going down. But, you know, like you say, it's something that they didn't address. Well, they tried to address it in the summer with the signing of Rhian Brewster. But at the end of the day, they're not in a privileged position like Wolves are, where they can afford to spend a lot of money on an expensive youngster who will come good in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years' time. You know, they needed goals now. And, you know, they didn't end up signing, you know, someone who could have consistently, you know, was a proven goal scorer. You know, and in January, they're not looking like they're doing that either. You know, I think, you know, they have been lucky with injuries, but a lot of the signings that they have made have turned out, you know, to be poor. You know, obviously, we've already mentioned Rhian Brewster up front. Ollie Burke ended up, I think he was on loan last season, so I don't think he's a transfer. He might have been on loan to someone else and Sheffield United have bought him. But he has ended up pretty poor. Ampadu hasn't really done anything. You know, and Bogle and Law have barely played. Bogle, you know, when he has played, he's looked really good, but he's barely played. The only signing, really, in the summer that has looked okay for Sheffield United has been Ramsdale. But I still think it's a downgrade on what they had last season with Henderson.
Well, the signing they made last January was Sander Berger, and he was brilliant for
them. Yeah, he is. And I can't see him staying with Sheffield United in the Championship. I think he's definitely good enough to be a Premier League player. But then again, people like Buendia and Sarr are good enough to be Premier League players, so who knows? But yeah, it's a shame, because all the people, you know, who said, oh, Sheffield United, second season syndrome, you know, they're getting found out. It's a shame that those people, you know, have been proven right. But, you know, at the end of the day, they haven't got enough quality to be able to grind out results, which is something that you need down the bottom of the table.
I think if they work out their offensive issues this summer and keep key players, I think they could be back in the Premier League no time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at some of the football that, you know, Sheffield United were playing in the Championship 2 seasons ago, obviously with, well, not going to say worst players, but not the squad, current squad that they have. They were playing brilliant, you know, free-flowing, attacking, you know, really dynamic football. They were one of the most exciting teams to watch when they got promoted that season. And I think that, you know, should they go down to the Championship, if they manage to keep key players, they'd boss it. They'd absolutely run wild in the Championship. I do genuinely believe that. Because they would keep Chris Wilder. Mm-hmm. You know, Sheffield United owners has already come out and said that they're going to keep Chris Wilder, which is, you know, a smart move. It's not Chris Wilder's fault that they're getting relegated. Mm-hmm. It's just down to the quality of the squad that they have. And at the end of the day, if they did sack Chris Wilder, who are they going to bring in? You know, who's someone who Sheffield United could realistically bring in that would do a better job for them than Chris Wilder? I can't think of anyone. You know, they're not going to bring in Alan Pardew or Ian Holloway or, you know,
Tony Pulis.
Tony Pulis, yeah, exactly. You know, for the sake of bringing in someone like that, you'd be far better off sticking with Chris Wilder, because then you have more than a good chance of coming back up into the Premiership. You know, we saw that with... look at the difference this season in the Championship. Norwich are looking like... Not like they're going to walk the league, but they're looking pretty good sitting on top of the table at the moment. And you're looking at Watford, who ended up sacking the manager, and they're not even in the playoff places at the moment. You know, and looking at Bournemouth, who, yeah, that's a bit of a different story because they didn't sack Howe, he left.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, they're sat in sixth at the moment. So, you know, it just shows the difference that if you keep the manager, because there was no reason to sack Farker and there's no reason to sack Wilder, as long as they keep the manager, keep, you know, majority of the squad, I do think Sheffield United will, you know, do well in the Championship next season. And it feels really dismissive to say that because, you know, I don't want to say that until they're mathematically down, but I do think they're down.
Yeah, yeah. It could just take a bit of investment this month. You know, goal guns blazing, get a striker in, and their fortunes change, but that's a big bet to make.
Yeah, exactly. You know, especially when you consider the 12 points off. Even if they did bring in a striker, there probably wouldn't be that much of a point swing. Because who would want to join Sheffield United when they're in that sort of position? You know, especially players from abroad who, you know, don't know much about Sheffield United. They're not going to want to go into that situation where it's almost certain relegation. And if they do go out, spend big, sign a player on big wages, then they'll just be stuck with him in the Championship. So, you know, they're probably better off just keeping the squad that they have, not spending big, making sure that they're in a comfortable financial position. I'm not, you know, certain on their financial position, but from what I know, they're pretty stable. Don't, you know, splurge anything. Make sure that financially you're comfortable in the Championship, because I'm pretty certain that that group of players is good enough to get re-promoted.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. What's the next game? I mean, it's the biggest match, but the most disappointing.
Yeah. I would have put my mortgage on it being 0-0 before this game. Honestly. Every single big game, it happened with Liverpool and Man City a couple of seasons ago as well. Every single big game that the media hypes up, oh, it's going to be such an exciting game, it's going to be a game of the season, it's always 0-0 because neither team wants to lose. You know, if Liverpool would have lost that, then they'd have been basically out of the title race. If Man U would have lost that, you know, they'd have really struggled to, you know, kick on, keep the high momentum going. You know, and Liverpool had kicked on. Neither team wanted to lose it, so neither team went for it. And it was always going to be such a boring game. They're always
going. With that being the case, that saw someone take an opportunity in the next game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're looking at, you know, speaking to teams who wanted to take an opportunity. Man City ended up doing that. You know, spanking Crystal Palace 4-0. John Stones, of all people, bagging a brace. And he's been, you know, one of the surprise packages for me in terms of this season, John Stones. His improvement has just been fantastic alongside Ruben Diaz. And, you know, I'm Eric Laporte, who, you know, we were talking about as, you know, one of the best defenders in the league, you know, last season, you know, who was a nailed-on starter for Pep Guardiola. He's going to be struggling to get back into the side with Stones and Diaz performing as well as they are at the moment.
Oh, Diaz has been sensational. 60 million. I thought that was a bit of a steep passage, but he's been brilliant. Ake, he hasn't really had much of a chance to show himself.
A lot of times he's been deployed as a left back, which isn't really his preferred position.
No.
So he's not really had a chance to shine. But, you know, I said it at the start of the season, you know, they were paying £40 million for a backup.
Yeah. Another player that's improved for them is Ilkay Gundogan. Phil Foden's probably been their player of the season, would you say?
I really think he's stepped up into that David Silva role. I think that he's such a good player, Foden.
Yeah.
Honestly, I know that young English players are often overhyped, you know, but I do genuinely think Foden could be the next David Silva. He's such a good player. You know, I mean, you're talking about Pep Guardiola saying he's the best young player he's ever worked with, and he literally worked with Leo Messi. Like, you don't know how much of that is, you know, hyperbole, how much of that is, you know, just hyping his own players up, and how much of that is, you know, he genuinely believes that. But the fact that he's come out and said it shows that he has, you know, an enormous amount of confidence and trust in Foden. And Foden's repaid that. He's been absolutely phenomenal this season. And I think, you know, Foden, he's almost got to be, you know, a starter for England. You know, you're looking at that England team, and we do have a lot of quality in that role. You know, you look at the likes of Grealish, the likes of Barkley, the likes of Maddison, who all play a similar role. But Foden's really making a good case as to why he should be a starter for England. He's been absolutely magnificent for City this season.
I mean, I haven't really got much else to add on that.
Yeah, I mean, this City side, you know, last season, they did look off the pace. And, you know, this season they have, you know, they start again, like Man United, they started slow and they've ended up, you know, picking themselves up and they're performing really well. You know, we're talking about the defence. They've only conceded 13 goals in 18 games, you know, this season. They've only lost two matches, you know, and they were early in the season. You know, you're looking at losing 5-2 against Leicester in September, which is 5 of the 13 goals that they've conceded all season, by the way. You know, apart from that, they've conceded 8 goals in 17 games. You know, and you're looking at the game against Spurs, which they lost in November, and they haven't lost a game since then in any competition. You know, they've not won a match since December. You know, Man City, you know, they're really looking in good form. And, you know, they've really turned it around from the start of the season. And, you know, we could more than easily see Pep lifting the Premier League again this season.
He could do the treble, whether that be Champions League or FA Cup. And he's obviously in the League Cup final and the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got Borussia Mönchengladbach in the round of 16 of the Champions League, which, you know, should be a winnable game on paper. But in the past couple of weeks, they've beaten both Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund Gladbach. So, you know, they clearly have somewhat about them. You know, City aren't just going to go there and roll over them. Like you said, you know, the League Cup final they've got coming up in April, I think it is, against Spurs. You know, that's a chance for Pep to lift some silverware. I know he loves the League Cup more than he loves his own kids. And, you know, you're looking at the FA Cup, they've got Swansea in the next round, a game which they should be winning. I know Swansea are looking good in the Championship. They're looking really good in the Championship.
Quite equally as defensively strong with Freddie Woodman and goal.
They are a very good side, Swansea. But again, they are a Championship team. City should be winning that. Man City do have multiple chances of winning a trophy this season.
Well, you say that, but Cheltenham almost pulled off a massive shock.
Cheltenham did, yeah. Michael Duff's side really put on a
performance of the season.
They definitely put a good account of themselves out there. You know, those players, they can definitely be proud of the way that they performed. You know, it took an offside goal for City to take the lead against them. I do think when Sean Dyche does eventually leave Burnley, you know, I'm hoping Michael Duff's going to be the man to take over in United's Burnley legend. But yeah, they definitely put in a great account for themselves. But at the end of the day, the quality that City had, you know, overwhelmed them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that that's something that, you know, happens a lot in terms of City's cup games. They do tend to have easy run-ins, but at the end of the day, you can only win what's put in front of you. And Man City and Pep Guardiola have a good habit of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Are we done with City? Or
yeah, I mean, you know, I just think that City are really putting in a good account for themselves this mm-hmm. season. Yeah, I mean, we've said a lot about Chelsea. I don't really want to dwell too much on them, but I mean, we can quickly go over your thoughts on the Leicester game.
It was the same issues as we saw in the Fulham game. Mm. Lethargic, lack of drive, and, you know, Leicester being a better team than Fulham, they were able to capitalise on that. They got the win. Fair play to them.
Mm. Yeah, you know, we're talking about teams who are, you know, putting themselves in good nick. You know, you're looking at Leicester, who, you know, do have European football this season, currently sat in third place. You know, we're talking about Man City and Man United pushing for the title. They're only 2 points behind Man United. But, you know, yeah, Chelsea, you know, were really, they struggled to get, you know, out the starting gates in this game, really. Leicester just absolutely, you know, smothered them this game. And yeah, it was just a poor performance from Chelsea and a good performance from Leicester. There's not too much really to say.
No, could have been more, should have been more.
Yeah.
As a Chelsea fan, I'm lucky that it was only two.
Yeah. And apparently after this game as well, Frank Lampard, you know, shook all the players' hands and thanked him for the service, basically. So I think he knew after that result that he was on the way out.
The board put out something after the game that they were going to review his recent results. So I think that what happened today was pretty much in the works from that game point, and maybe during the Fulham game, because they saw, oh, our players aren't, you know, up for it.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it was in the works from before that. I think the Leicester game was probably the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, nothing really to add on to that, right?
No. Yeah, I mean, we'll move on to... we've got a Fulham and Man United. What were your thoughts on this game, Harry?
Well, I mentioned it before, Ruben Loftus-Cheek come back into this game. Obviously, ineligible for the Chelsea game due to the loan thing. You know, that play against current clubs. With him coming in, Fulham look more dangerous, more up for it. A lot more drive in midfield. But, you know, it was United's quality that essentially won them the game. You know, albeit tightly. And Fulham took a shock lead, thanks to Adam Müller-Lookman. And, yeah. I wish they kind of sat on that, but they wanted more, which I guess you can't really hate on, because United are going to score against you, whether you like it or not, because they're going to get a penalty or something dodgy. And they actually almost equaled the amount of shots that United had, but they made more of their attempts in that they shared the same amount of goals, shots on target as them, despite having less shots. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think with Fulham, it's that, you know, they are consistently putting in good accounts for themselves, you know. I mean, you're looking at where Fulham are on the table. They're currently 5 points behind Brighton, albeit with a game in hand. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just basing it off of form and how the teams have looked recently, you know, you've backed Fulham to finish above teams like Brighton and Newcastle. You know, they've got some crucial games coming up for Fulham. You know, they've got in the next two games, they've got Brighton and West Brom. You know, so that could end up being, you know, crucial for them. That they're two games where really they need to be getting 6 points if they want to start looking at survival, because Fulham are chasing at the moment. They're not, you know, having to keep distance. They actively need teams around them to drop points. So yeah, those two games, you know, after those two games, we could be looking at, you know, knowing the fate of Fulham almost. If they don't get two good results there, that could almost signal, you know, that it's going to be a really, it's going to be a real slog. If they can't get results against Brighton and West Brom, it's going to be a real hard slog to be able to stay up.
Can you realistically see Newcastle going down?
If they stick with Steve Bruce, I can, definitely. I know that Rafa Benitez has left his job at Newcastle, and that's got all the Geordies excited and creaming in the pants. But, you know, you never know. If they do stick with Steve Bruce, there will be definitely a serious danger of Newcastle getting relegated, because they've looked fucking awful, haven't they? Like,
oh my God, that game against Villa, Christ.
Yeah, well, it's not just the game against Villa for Newcastle. You know, you're looking at the game against Sheffield United. They were the first team to lose against them this season.
They were, that's very true.
Yeah, you know, the game against Arsenal, you know, the game against Leicester, they haven't really showed anything, you know. In the last, 6. In the last 6 league games, they've scored 1 goal. Now, don't get me wrong, they've played some good teams in that time, but they've also played Sheffield United. And, you know, if they do end up sticking with Steve Bruce, I do think that there is a high chance that they will go down. You know, don't get me wrong, they could bring Rafa back. They could bring in a new manager.
Is he at his Chinese job or not?
Yeah, he's officially left it. He left it a couple of days ago.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if there's something in the works or anything like that. But I know that Newcastle fans have had enough of Steve Bruce. And yeah, I do think Newcastle will stay up. If gun to my head, because I do think they will replace Steve Bruce. But, you know, if they do stick with him, which is a real possibility, then, you know, they could be in some serious trouble, Newcastle, especially with, you know, teams like Fulham, West Brom looking on the up, you know, Burnley as well, getting in decent form. Brighton, you know, they only look, you know, a decent stroke, a look away from getting results. So Newcastle could very easily see themselves in the Championship next season. And, you know, players like St. Maximin, like Fraser, like Wilson, like Almiron, you know, I think we'll definitely struggle to keep hold of them if they do get relegated.
I mean, with that being said, Steve Bruce does have a reputation of never being relegated. I think they might wait until the end of the season before they pull the trigger on, you know, bringing Benitez in, but ultimately it does depend on the next two games, as you mentioned, because they are versus teams around them, and that will put them in a more dodgy position.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, if it ends up coming to the final few games of the season, you know, Newcastle's last two games are Sheffield United at home and Fulham away. So if they need the results, you know, it could end up coming down to the final day. But yeah, that is definitely something that you need to keep an eye on. Just to touch on Man United really quickly, I think, you know, I don't really think I'm going to say anything new, particularly. You know, now that Paul Pogba's back to his best, they do look really dangerous going forward. You know, the likes of Martial, who looked pretty shite last season, in my opinion, and at the start of this season. and he's looking improved. And obviously, you know, like Rashford, Cavani, Bruno, they're looking really good. It's just defensively, the shocking. I think they could do with bringing in a new right back, you know. Bringing in a new left back in Telles has done wonders for Shaw. You know, it's provided him with competition, which every player needs, and it's made him a lot less complacent, and it's improved his performance no end. And Wan-Bissaka could do with the same thing, because there's no one breathing down his neck in that position. And obviously, they need a new centre-back, because Maguire is not good enough for that level. You know, you're looking at conceded, you know, top of the league, Man United have conceded 25 goals in 19 games. You know, that's more than 15th place Burnley have conceded. So,
yeah, but they
defensively, they are definitely looking suspect. What's that?
They do have a tendency to fall behind, and then that gives them the kick up the arse, doesn't it? So,
Yeah, that's true. I just think, you know, if anything does end up costing him this season, it will be that defence. Because this is definitely Man United.
The improvements in Luke Shaw, definitely.
And that's why I'm saying bringing in a new right back, because you'll probably see that in Wan-Bissaka as well. And yeah, you know, this is definitely Man United's best chance in a Premier League since Alex Ferguson left. So,
in the league in 2017.
Oh, they did win. They did come second in the season that Man City got 100 points. But they were still like 18, 19 points away.
Yeah, they had 81.
Yeah,
I mean, the stand-up players for them have been Bruno, definitely, and Rashford.
And I think we knew that ever since, you know, the difference that Bruno's made has been obvious ever since he came in January. You know, we saw the difference in that Man United side from going from, you know, outside of Europe to ending up finishing third above the likes of Chelsea and Leicester. You know, he really made a difference to that Man United team, and he's really made a difference this season as well. They do look like a Man United team. Especially going forward, you look at the way that Man United play, and they look like league, you know, they look like a team that should be challenging for the title with the way that, you know, they play, the way they move with the ball. You know, they're looking, you know, 1,000 times better than they did 12 months ago. And I think a lot of that is down to Bruno. I know it's stating the obvious, but you can't give him enough praise. He's been magnificent for him.
He was in the EA Team of the Year, wasn't he?
I believe so, yeah. And he's, you know, well deserved, because he's had a, you know, marvellous 12 months at Man United.
Yeah, I mean, you can't understate that. I mean, the impact he's had on that Man United team. It's crazy. Should we get on to a game that you've probably been very eager to talk about?
Yes, I have been salivating for the past hour to talk about this game. All the talk after the game was about how bad Liverpool were. God, weren't Liverpool awful. Going forward, they created nothing. And we will get to that. But first, you know, as a Burnley fan, of course I'm going to heap praise on my own club. We defended absolutely fucking brilliantly. Like, oh, just the... Apart from that one slip-up from Ben Mee in the first half, him and Tarkowski were absolutely faultless. During this game, Lawton and Taylor as well, and Peters, all put in an absolute shift, so that Pope didn't really have that much to do. I know, you know, people were heaping praise on the Pope, but besides that save down to his left for Salah, he didn't really have that much to do besides, you know, claiming crosses like he always does. But, you know, the entire back six with Peters coming on for Taylor at half time, performed brilliantly. You know, into the midfield, Westwood and Brownhill, absolute, you know, pit bulls fighting for everything in the centre of the park. They absolutely dominated Wijnaldum and Thiago. Up front, you know, Ashley Barnes and even Chris Wood, who I have labelled a donkey for the entirety of this season, he even looked like he was actually trying in this game, which he hasn't done for ages. You know, the entire team put in an absolute shift in this game, and I can't heap enough praise onto them for that. You know, and Dwight McNeil as well, someone who I haven't mentioned yet. The difference that Dwight McNeil made, you know, we looked like a shell of a team without Dwight going forward. And, you know, we still looked like a shell of a team going forward, but with Dwight, we looked a lot better. You know, that he, you know, for about the fourth game in a row where we played Liverpool, we sent Trent to the shops. You know, it was absolutely a brilliant team performance all around from Burnley. And I just wanted to get that out of the way before we do inevitably start bashing Liverpool.
Yeah. Well, I was going to mention that the Dwight solo run, and then the shot that he took, it went wide. I thought that was going to be a goal. Do you remember that?
And, you know, that's something that we've missed when we've not played Dwight, and that he looked absolutely knackered at the first half of this season. Because last season, I think this is something that gets overlooked. But, you know, as, you know, someone who was 20/21 years old last season, he played every single minute of every single game in the Premier League last season. Like, that is just a phenomenal achievement for someone of his age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, putting him in, you know, the company of people like Frank Lampard and, what's his face? Michael Owen. Mm-hmm. You know, names who went on to, well, not so much in Owen's case, but, you know, it puts him in great company. And, you know, he looked absolutely knackered. And this injury that he's got was probably the best thing that happened to him because he's come back reinvigorated. And again, you know, another chance was the Goodmanson, you know, he cut inside, got into the box and ended up, you know, hitting wide. That was another good chance. So it wasn't like, you know, we ended up nicking a penalty and, you know, smashing grab. To be honest with you, we probably created a similar amount of good chances as Liverpool did.
Oh, yeah. But any cross that came in, you dealt with that.
Hmm.
Yeah. Trying to remember what else happened. I mean, Firmino, I don't understand what the obsession with him is.
Hmm.
Origi is clearly not a decent replacement either.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, a Premier League centre forward has to score that. I'm sorry. I still don't know how we won that game because, you know, if it was anyone else other than Origi, we would have been 1-0 down in that position and that would have been it. We would have lost that game. So we're definitely very fortunate that it was Origi in that position.
Yep. I don't know, this Liverpool team, you know, to going back to your original point about Liverpool being bad, yeah, they have been. They've scored 1 in 6 games. They're on a 6-game winless streak. I don't know whether that is the longest that they've been, you know, in the Premier League or not.
I think it's the longest that they've been since Klopp took over, at the very least.
Hmm.
You know, and people bang on about, oh, Van Dijk's injury, Joe Gomez's injury. You know, defensively, they've been fine. Defensively, there's not really been much issue this season. It's going forward. You know, Salah has done well this season. I mean, he's the top scorer, for fuck's sake. So, obviously, he's going to be, you know, playing well. But he's not really been in form this season. Jota looked great when he came in, but he's gotten injured. Firmino... He's a number 10, first off. He's not a centre-forward. But also, he's just bad. No, he's not bad, but he's bad in front of goal. And Mane, you know, again, is someone who, you know, I don't know, he's not been bad, but, you know, especially if you hold him up to the standards that, you know, he's been at for the last couple of seasons and the standards that Liverpool want out of those players, it's not as good.
No. I mean, I'm starting to think, have teams sussed them out? Have they? Do they know the Klopp style of play now? I mean, you certainly have. You've taken 4 points away at Anfield in the last two games. So,
Yeah, we've not lost in four games at Anfield. I don't know. I'm not sure, really, whether this is the Klopp burnout season. You know, they've won the Champions League. They've won the Premier League. There's not too much to strive for, to aim for now. Apart from, you know, retaining those titles. I'm just wondering whether it is. You know, obviously it's not as dramatic as what we saw at Borussia Dortmund when they were bottom of the league at February. But I'm wondering if it is the Klopp burnout season. You know, Klopp's mask has dropped. He's, you know, shown himself to be a lot more irritable, a lot more whiny, a lot more of a moaner. It's, you know, I'm wondering, is Klopp's time, well, I'm not going to say is Klopp's time coming to an end, because, you know, that would be harsh on him, and I don't think that he will be sacked within the next two seasons at the very least, unless we see something similar to the Borussia Dortmund effect happening at Liverpool. But I'm just wondering, are these the early signs of things starting to go wrong at Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, who have they got next? They've got Spurs, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, if they don't win that, is it fair to rule them out of the title race? I mean, Tottenham will take, you know, leapfrog over them, possibly Everton, and they've got two games in hand over them. Then, you know, Leicester, City, United, they're expected to win their games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Liverpool have a really tough run of fixtures coming up. You know, you're looking at Spurs away, who could leapfrog them if they beat them. West Ham away, who could leapfrog Liverpool if they beat them. You know, Brighton at home, Man City at home, Leicester away, Leipzig away in the Champions League, and Everton at home. That is a tough run of games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could be looking at Liverpool, you know, being out of the top four race, never mind the title race, if that run of games is particularly bad.
Yeah. I mean, in the Champions League, it seemed teams had tossed them out. Now it seems to have come here now. Teams have started to work out the Klopp style of play. They're a little more precarious going forward because they know that Liverpool are great on the counter-attack.
Yeah.
I mean, you let Liverpool have the ball all game, you know?
Yeah.
And then you caught them on the counter yourselves.
Yeah, that's the thing, especially with, you know, the disrespect, I think, that Klopp showed us by benching Salah. You know, there wasn't really much attacking threat, you know, at all that came from them. You know, so we were happy to let him have the ball. We knew that we weren't going to dominate possession. We knew that we had to sit deep, that we had to deal with the creativity of players like Trent and Thiago. And we nullified them. Trent and Thiago had awful games. You know, Trent particularly has really underperformed this season. I don't know whether it's because he's still struggling with injuries potentially, but he's really performed a lot worse than he has done in the past, you know, 18 months or so. Ever since he was introduced into this Liverpool team, he's performed a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't think of why.
No, I don't know. Maybe it's like we're saying about Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Maybe it's just down to a lack of competition. I don't know. But, you know, he's not been a key man creatively. I mean, you know, I'm not sure whether this is an indictment of Trent or just the way Liverpool played in general against us. But I think it was something like Trent attempted 15 crosses against us and not one of them ended with a Liverpool header. Every single one of those 15 crosses either went out for a throw-in or we headed out.
Yeah. I don't understand why Klopp thought that would be... He obviously didn't watch tapes on Burnley and disrespectful in that respect.
Yeah, I don't know why he thought that crossing would work against me and Tarkowski. I mean, that's the reason why we get spanked every season by Man City 5-0. It's because they don't cross.
Yeah, I mean, even at corners, they weren't even playing it short. But did they rent in the box? That is Pope's wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah. Pope's going to claim them corners every single day of the week. Like, you know, he is definitely the best in the Premier League. You know, I wouldn't be too confident in saying the best in Europe because I don't watch too much European football. But he's got to be up there as one of the best in Europe at collecting crosses.
I'm sure there's probably a stat out there.
There probably is, you know. But I know he's definitely top in terms of high claims in the Premier League by quite a way, I think.
Yeah, I mean, how tall is he? Like 6'4"?
I believe he's 6'5".
Jesus.
Yeah, he's a lanky bastard, he's Pope. But yeah, I just think, you know, but like we say, you know, it's not just about bashing Liverpool, you know, we played really well. Barnes winning the penalty, which, you know, I think was a Stonewall penalty personally. And Fabinho could have even, you know, I think that would have probably been a penalty if he'd have gone down Barnes. So I don't see how there can be any complaints really about it being a penalty. But he kept his composure, slotted it home, and yeah, we ended up doing what we needed to do, and that's why I'm pretty confident that we'll stay up. It's because we can end up grinding out results. We do what we need to do, you know, and we can do that better than almost anyone in the Premier League.
Above Pope in the high claim stats are Darlow, Areola, Ramsdale, and Martinez is top.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's surprising. I must be thinking back then to, like, a while ago. Yeah, that surprised me, actually. Probably because Tarky and me had most of it out, to be honest.
Oh, God, he battered everyone last season.
He what?
Nick Pope in high claims. Last season... 52, and the second place was Foster with 30, but he battered everyone in that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, Pope's always going to, you know, claim crosses. If it doesn't end up on the head of me or Tarkowski, it'll end up in the gloves of Pope. You know, unless you have, you know, someone like Ronaldo, you're not going to beat us with crosses. So I don't see why teams try to do that.
No. I mean, maybe if they put it towards the 6-yard line where he sort of has to go out further and then you catch him off like that. But they always put it in the 6-yard box.
Yeah.
He's getting that.
Of course he is.
If he's not, Tarkowski and me.
Yeah. Yeah, we're always gonna get those crosses. Like, and I mean, they weren't even trying, like, you know, like low-width crosses or something like that. You know, ones at shin height that, you know, could be potential banana skins. You know, they were constant, you know, floating them over the top, trying to get on Firmino's head. Like, I don't understand that, personally.
Me neither. I mean, it was hard to break you down directly as well. I mean, you had everyone back.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to do, though. Like, you know, no one beat them at Anfield in 4.5 years. Like, of course we're going to try and grind out that result.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to add, because Chelsea's home record is intact, thanks to Burnley.
Yeah. Yes, but
I mean, where... Six games isn't, you know, something to snuff at. But...
Oh, no, of course not. You know, 2017, what last time they lost at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Anfield is still a fortress. And at the end of the day, you know, if crowds were there, it could have been a completely different story. You know, that's one thing this season that has really... Well, it's really helped certain teams and it's hindered other teams, the fact that crowds aren't there. It's just... It's going to be such a weird, you know, thing to look back on 20 years down the line. Yeah. We're going to be looking back at this season and thinking... There were no fans, like, you know, it's going to be mental to think about.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully that isn't a sign for the future as well.
No, no. I mean, you know, who knows what's going on with the virus. You know, I'm not going to linger on it, but, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon, you know, thanks to... the ineptitude of world leaders. But this isn't a politics podcast. This is a football podcast. Let's talk about the FA Cup. We've got time. You know, I'll let you talk about, because I'm assuming this is the game that you watched. I'll let you talk about Chelsea and Luton.
I mean, it was similar to how it was against Burnley. Luton, really. I mean, lethargic performance. Should have got more goals. Certainly shouldn't have conceded. And that was the nail in the coffin. That performance wasn't good enough by Frank.
There's not really too much to say about it, really.
Patrick.
Yeah, I was about to say Abraham played well. Werner didn't. Hopefully we see an upturn in form from Werner, because he is a class player on his day. It's just the Chelsea tactics don't suit him. You know, he suits being up top with a big physical man, someone who can win the headers down for him, you know, someone like Giroud or Abraham, you know. You know, I think that we will see an upturn in form of Tuchel coming in. And also, you know, someone who really stood out to me in this game was Billy Gilmore. I thought he played really well.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a number of championship clubs looking at bringing him in on loan. And I think he's definitely someone who has a bright future, Chelsea.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we don't loan him out one season too much. You know, you need to use him. I don't know, you need to mould him now, I guess.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he's someone at that age needs regular football to be able to grow as a player. And anybody at that at Chelsea, you know, so.
No. But I don't want him to be loaned out in the championship too much that the time has passed for him to get in the Chelsea team.
Oh, yeah. No, don't get me wrong. I don't think he'll end up someone like a Van Ginkel, for example.
Well, Christ. I think he was doomed before he signed, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, what was it? Like 8 loan moves in 10 years or something? Right?
Yeah.
Aye.
Waste some money.
Aye. Well, didn't you make a profit on him? I swear you made a profit on him.
We bought him for 8 million. I don't know whether we sold him for money or not.
I swear you did this season. You sold him for money to like PSV or something.
Braga.
Oh no, you might have loaned him a PSV at one point. You probably did loan him a PSV at some point. I don't know. I'm talking out my ass. If we're talking about a more exciting Liverpool Man United game, let's talk about a more exciting Liverpool Man United game. Yeah, I mean, this one didn't end 0-0 because neither team were bothered about losing. You know, it was what the media were hyping up the game in the league to be. It was a good watch as a neutral, at the very least.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no long-term repercussions, you know. They don't drop any points, you know, they get knocked out. You know, if anything, it benefits Liverpool because it's not an extra game they're playing, or, you know.
Mm.
But it doesn't look like they're going to get any silverware. So,
yeah, which for a club that, you know, won the Premier League last season, won the Champions League the season before, you know, to go a season without silverware, you know, it's going to be, well, I'm not going to say it's going to be, you know, hurtful for Liverpool fans because they're Liverpool fans. You know, they're not going to be too bothered. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's got to sting a little, especially since they couldn't celebrate the Premier League, you know, win with an open-top bus parade or out like that.
Mm. Yeah. Well, even if they somehow turn it around, they're not going to be able to do that this season, are they?
Mm. Well, it's not looking like it, they will at this point, anyway.
No.
But they would be able to do it, you know, probably some point in the middle of next season. But if they lose the league title this season, then, you know, it would be pretty embarrassing if they did it, to be honest with you.
Mm.
You know, celebrating a league when you're not even the league champions.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
It'd be very tin pot, I must admit.
Yeah, that would be, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Man United looked, I don't want to say better, because, I don't know, they looked more organised without Bruno. Because that pass from Rashford, you don't see that with, they don't, with Bruno, it seemed the attack always went through him. So it was always down the middle. Now that you've removed him, put on the bench, Rashford was able to go wide, stick a lovely cross over to Greenwood and get a goal.
Oh.
And, you know, there were more crosses into the middle, particularly one that found Cavani that hit the post. Oh. So there are pros and cons of, you know, rotating in and out. Fernandes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with Donny van de Beek waiting in the wings at United, you know, he hasn't really gotten a super chance to show what he's made of yet. They do have options if, you know, Bruno were to pick up an injury or a bad suspension or something like that. They would have options to replace him. And I sort of see what you're saying. You know, I'm not going to say Bruno should be dropped or anything like that.
No.
But I do sort of see what you're saying. I think it's the fact that, you know, they allow Bruno, like you said, they allow Bruno basically free reign, free control over that sort of midfield third area, over like the midfield third going into the final third. They basically let Bruno do what he does and then everyone else sort of plays around that.
Yeah.
Whereas when Van der Beek was playing, there were more channels of creativity, you know, through Rashford, through Greenwood, you know, which if Bruno does end up, you know, like say getting an injury or even if he's just off form, you know, it shows that they're not just solely reliant on Bruno.
I'm a bit apprehensive to say because
you're going to say you want him to be dropped, aren't you? You're going to say they should drop him.
Who?
You. That's what you're saying.
No. No. If I'm Liverpool and I know I'm going out of a cup,
mm-hmm.
and Man United are my league rivals, very mm-hmm. close league rivals, and they bring on Bruno, wouldn't you not that I condone this, wouldn't you have someone to take him out?
Well, the idea probably went through a couple of people's heads. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Again, like you say, I don't condone that either. But it wouldn't surprise me if something like that were discussed. Yeah, I mean, personally, I wouldn't do it because, you know.
Like there's sportsmanship. And all
yeah, that's what I mean. But I won't be surprised if that thought went through.
No.
What I've said at the very least, because, you know, he is pretty classless as a manager, I'd say. Yeah. And to be honest with you, I'm surprised he hasn't found a way to blame Chris Wilder for this bad run of form, personally.
Okay, why?
Well, he always blames Chris Wilder, doesn't he?
Does he?
Having a go at Chris Wilder, you know, bottom of the league with Sheffield United, Chris Wilder, you know, having a go at the little one for saying five subs is a bad thing. Like, well, not even that it's a bad thing, but that, you know, it's more biased towards the big teams, which it is. Like,
it's a double-edged sword for me. Yeah. I'll leave it as that. I mean...
Yeah, I'm not going to get into a debate about that. But, you know, you'd think Klopp, who's got his own problems, wouldn't go after Wilder, who's bottom of the league like that. I wouldn't think that he'd have, you know, an inferiority complex like that.
Yeah.
And... And I do think it's funny how Sean Dyche absolutely rattled him when we played him. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love the post about who would win in a fight.
Oh, Dyche, 110%. Yeah. Every single day of the week, Sean Dyche would absolutely clark Jurgen Klopp.
Yes.
I mean, he used to play for Millwall, for fuck's sake. Like, you're not going to lose a fight if you played for Millwall.
Was he like a Vinnie Jones type?
Oh, Sean Dyche. He was a no-nonsense centre-half. He's, however you imagine Sean Dyche as a player, that's what he was like as a player.
Brilliant. Okay.
He was just your typical no-nonsence championship centre-half. None of this fancy 15-yard passing shit. Just oof it up to big centre-forward. Oh, it's fucking glorious.
Sometimes you need a bit of that, you know.
Yeah,
I
know. Especially in the championship. But yeah, Sean Dyche would absolutely batter Klopp. Because Dyche has clearly said something to wind him up. Because you see him, he just walks past Klopp and you can see him move his head as if he's saying something. Walks off and Klopp just storms after him. He's clearly said something to rattle him. Dyche turns around, Klopp shits himself. And, oh, it's just glorious how much he rattled him. It's beautiful. Anyway, are there any more cup games you want to cover? I mean, there's not too much that went on in the cup. Not too many. There's no upsets, really. I mean, we'll talk about the Cheltenham game. I mean, we touched on it briefly when we were discussing Man City. But Cheltenham did put in a good account for themselves in this game.
Yes, they did, yes. I mean, Ben Tozer was, I mean, he made a brilliant account of himself on a massive platform. I mean, that goal line clearance, they don't get better than that.
Yeah, I know. It was brilliant. And, you know, the young keeper as well. I mean, he was only 19 years old, was Griffiths, who started in net for him. What's that?
He's on West Brom's books.
Oh, right. But yeah, all 11 of those players, all 14 who featured, can all be proud of the performance that they did. You know, I was reading an interview with Michael Duff prior to this game, where he was talking about, you know, when he first went to Cheltenham, he was going to, you know, proper be like Sean Dyche, you know, 4-4-2, play shit football, basically. And I think they lost the first like four games or something with him in charge. So he knew he needed to adapt his game. He switched to a 3-5-2, and they play brilliant football now in League Two. And I feel like that's definitely something that they showed against this Man City side, was that, you know, they did take the game to them at times. You know, it wasn't like they were playing smash and grab style.
No, definitely not. It was just that final 8 minutes of magic.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the quality won out. I mean, you know, when you've got a player like Riyad Mahrez, you know, you're going to have to do something extra special to keep him quiet for 90 minutes. And, you know, the Cheltenham players, by that point, they were just absolutely knackered and they couldn't keep him out for the full 90, which, you know, is a real shame because, you know, they deserved something for that sort of performance that they put in.
Yeah, I mean, for the 81 minutes, not most Premier League sides could do that.
Oh, no. No, they were absolutely, you know, they can take so many positives from that game, Cheltenham. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they can definitely leave with their heads held high, 100%.
Should we wrap it up on that high?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a lot else to talk about. So, yeah, we might as well leave it on that positive note. What have you got to plug, Harry? What do you want to plug?
I'll plug my Twitter, at HazardChelseaFC.
Right, and I'll plug mine, at IWGPChrisBFC. That's it for us for this episode, and, you know, we'll see you next time. I don't know. Intros are always... Not intros, outros are always so fucking awkward. I hate them.